Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Well, folks, welcome back. And it is now or never to cover the Constitution, and it's now or never to save it. So we've really been providing you over the past, the Reclaiming of the Republic radio show aired in 2016 on Constitution Day. So, in other words, we're, 6 years into this. And so we proudly got 6 years under our belt, moving into the seventh. So what we do every year, and we really started doing this when we hit Red State Talk Radio, because the initial, when we were doing local, we only had one show a week. Now we have the opportunity of going every day, and which gives us an opportunity to provide you the source documents, what they actually say. This is why we read. I don't want you to take my word for it. You don't need to. You need to take the framers' words for it. You need to take the literal documents for, you know, fact, because that's what they say. And then you can start dealing with it, because then you can start making the decisions of what are you going to do about how they defined the Constitution. That's why the ratification debates are so important. But equally important is the Constitution itself, which is why every year on Constitution Day, we actually kick off the, you know, the reading of the Constitution right here on Red State Talk Radio. And so last year it took about a month to get through this. We're going to try to forego actually, I'm not going to do any of the promos other than the two promo spots that we have every so many minutes. I'm not going to do any of the endorsements. We're just going to try to focus on getting through the Constitution. And what we're going to do this year is we are going to dovetail parts of the Bill of Rights for the 21st century, and or what we call the positions, because we already went through these about mid-April going into early June. So it was about a two-month period where we dealt with exactly what has to be done, what are the violations of the Constitution that we have, and what needs to be done about them. What I haven't done, what I didn't do when I did that Bill of Rights for the 21st century, is I did not sit down and go through the Constitution line by line and say, oh boy, that's a big one, that's important, and create a petition for that. So what we will be doing this year is we will be creating these footnotes of, oh, I've got to capture that. So we'll be adding to the Bill of Rights. But what we're also going to do is we're going to dovetail, because things that we did cover, we're going to talk about petitions that need to be generated. And so let me be clear, because most people think they've got to write all these petitions themselves. Why? I've already written three petitions. Actually, five petitions are in the works. So the fifth petition is in the works. So as I write these petitions are for you to use. And if you write a petition, we would expect you to share that with everybody in the Republic so that they can use your petition. Now, they may improve upon it. They may change it. You may change your own petition. You may change mine. As long as you're not changing the intent and the context of the petition, then it's okay to change it. It's okay to, you know, because there's no reason why it has to be perfected in, you know, concrete or in some metallurgy, you know, some metal figure or, you know, statue or something. You're not creating a piece of art here. We are actually molding this. So as you go along and you realize that one of the things that you know, in one of your petitions, you realize that there's some more evidence that proves your petition is right, you can add that. Now, if there's something that proves that your petition is felonious and that becomes evident, then you need to actually either redo the petition or let it go. If that's the case, 9 times out of 10, folks, that's not going to be the case. So what I am exposing to you, when we talk about these petitions, I'm going to try to remember this as we go through these things, that we're trying to create a library of petitions so that when you want to run for county commissioner this coming year, and out of 120 petitions that you will end up fielding, maintaining, and managing over the course of the next 2 years while you're campaigning on why this fool sitting in this county commissioner seat or county supervisor seat does not deserve to be there, even though that's not officially campaigning, what you're doing is you have a, it is a campaign. It's a PR campaign against the person that's in office. So that when it comes time for you to file, you become the logical hands-on favorite of becoming the county commissioner. You or whomever becomes the champion of these petitions. This becomes very critical. And it's all about full compliance of the Constitution. It's all about running a campaign demanding full compliance of the Constitution. And we've gotten into this before, and we'll talk more about it. But what we want to talk about is the Constitution, as you probably have deduced. So that said, I will be trying to work in, if possible, interviews. Now, I will say this. I've sent out an invitation to Mike Lindell, and I've been told that he will respond. But we'll see. We'll see if he does, because I would love to have Mike Lindell on this show actually either reading or contributing, because the best way to learn and understand the Constitution. So I've actually, not just him, there's a lot of other people that I've invited to come on the show. And, you know, if you've got a favorite part of the Constitution, come on the show and we'll talk, you know, as I get to that, I'll have you on. We'll pre-record that. And we'll use that as a big part of the discussion of that part of the Constitution. My advice is if you want to learn the Constitution, then you need to start, you know, taking this show and every subsequent show while we cover the Constitution as a book, as a guide. And if you want to actually cut out the promos, because it's not like these are actual commercials. The only reason I actually have these promos is because as I do monologue and as I talk, especially now, it was a kind of fortuitous because I had kind of designed these in the intent that eventually when we monetize this, we'll already have the same spots that will be able to allow local advertisers to fit into your radio station to fill in these advertisements or promos. That's why, you know, I'm not using my time to create that type of funding. That's why the funding that I get when we start airing on your radio show, we're going to turn that right back around to you and help you fund your efforts. When I say fund, we're going to pay for those things that will propel Reclaiming the Republic, promote the Reclaiming of the Republic, that will promote this concept of holding public servants accountable, the concept of full compliance of the Constitution, that every public servant must be held accountable, demanding that the people have the power to remove any politician quickly and justly, and so forth. And so as we get champions in every county to do this, this will actually grow. It'll actually take this down the viral path, if you understand what I'm saying. So we'll just kind of dive into the Constitution. But I will say this, and I'll always say this. This show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you're listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. And there's nothing more academic regarding the Constitution than the Constitution itself, reading the source document. Anybody that does studies and anybody that does all of these things on the Constitution but doesn't read the Constitution is basically giving you propaganda. It is not academic. Academic is the source document itself, and then using other references, other documents. This is why we already covered the ratification debates. And so this is why definitizing, we've covered this several times, definitizing the Constitution is the utmost priority for every state. every state. We actually got a bill that we didn't get passed, but we put it in motion in Wyoming. We expect this bill to be in Wyoming again this year, and we hope that every state in the union that wants, every red state at a minimum that wants to save this republic, will get this bill and get this bill passed so that we can actually start demanding from the state legislature full compliance of the Constitution. Now, people are going to have to clean up. They're going to have to wash their clothes. They're going to have to wash their hands. They're going to have to stop doing some of these things. The people that pick this stuff up, when government picks up the path of truth and abides full compliance to the law of the land, then all of a sudden behaviors are going to have to change. But that's okay, because I believe that America is very forgiving. We're Christian. We're a very forgiving nation. And we can forgive those transgressions as long as you get on the path and stay on the path, especially if you can prove that it's not you that was actually, you know, like these governors or anybody that passed a law that was tyrannical, like a governor when they did these emergency things. I was told I could do these things. I had no idea. And they're remorse, and they say, I am so sorry. I defied your trust. I violated your liberties. You know, I still want to be a servant. I want to serve you, and I am committed to this. I mean, we need to give people the chance, but we need to make sure that they prove that they're worthy of the second chance as well. So with that, we're going to go into the promos, and when I come back, I'll basically dive into what we call the preambles, but let's define what the preambles are, because there are two of them, and I'll point them out, and then we'll dive into the Constitution. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so into the preamble. So what is a preamble? Yeah, you know, and so what is this thing we call preamble? A preamble is a preliminary statement. It is an introduction to a formal document these are the definitions of a preamble. It's the introduction to a formal document that explains its purpose. It's a statement accompanying a law or regulation specifying its purpose for reason for enactment.
A preamble, this is Wikipedia's kind of lead in to what a preamble is. A preamble is an introductory and expressionary statement in a document that explains the document's purpose and the underlying philosophy. When applied to the opening paragraphs of a statute, it may recite historical facts pertinent to the subject of the statute. It is distinct from the long title or enacting formula of a law. Now, there are two preambles in the Constitution. And so people go, why? Why did they do that? And it was very, to me, it's very clear and very specific. The preamble to the Constitution is obviously that first paragraph that you read before you get into the Constitution itself, because the Constitution and the law is held within the Articles. They did an additional preamble in Article 1, Section 8. At the very top of Article 1, Section 8, there was this spirit, the preamble, explaining the intent behind all of the following or the subsequent powers that were being delegated, the specific powers being delegated to the government. This is why we pointed this out. Madison and the rest of them during the ratification debate said that why would we grant general defense and welfare powers to the federal government and then list very specific powers? The whole point was to explain the purpose of the listing of the powers, why they were being granted. There were no powers specifically within that preamble except for one thing. And that is the uniformity spirit, the uniformity clause of the preamble. Bottom line, if you read the preamble, the intent of the federal government having powers was to ensure that no state could take advantages of other states and that the government had to treat each state uniformly. In other words, the federal government couldn't start creating favors and manipulating states to take advantage of other states. Now, technically, the federal government violated the Constitution and, well, that goes into the Civil War. And as we kind of led up to the Civil War, the federal government actually started violating the Constitution regarding slavery with the Missouri Compromise. There's this long string of these abuses or violations that led to that war. Because eventually the abolition movement and people were so ardent against abolishing slavery, or not against, but for the abolishment of slavery. And most people in the South, they didn't want to defend it. They didn't have it. Most of the people in the South were poor and destitute. It was only the rich folks that were throughout the South that ended up deciding to actually secede from the Union and fight a civil war. This all being said, I'm not going to get into the history of all of this. I'm just trying to point out that there are two preambles in the Constitution. So when we hit the second preamble, I will point out that this, again, is a preamble. So that's not going to happen today. So that's why I'm going to have to say it again, and I will explain the preamble again. But bottom line, a preamble is an introductory statement kind of explaining the whole intent behind this document, behind the law, what they're trying to do. And so as we go through this, I'm going to be taking several breaks because I'm going to identify which parts of the Constitution are actually being violated. And I have to tell you this. You can go and get an old color-coded, I call it the color-coded Constitution. Go to the Constitution Society, which would be theconstitution.org. And I took what John Roland, who was the former Attorney General of Texas, went through in as the Constitution Society, and they kind of, you know, in a group think way back in the 80s or 90s, they highlighted parts of the Constitution that were being violated. Now, health and everything else being what it is, you know, it's I have no idea if John is even alive anymore. And I've said this a few times already. The fact is that that website is still there, and you can still download this. So if you'd like a copy of the color-coded Constitution, that's where you can go. But I'm going to identify other parts that they don't identify. Can you believe that they've actually improved on their violations? They've increased parts of the Constitution that they're violating? Can you believe that? What part of the Constitution isn't being violated? Well, the word Article 1, that's not being violated. Most of Article 1 is, but the words themselves aren't. I'm just being funny. Anyway, hopefully you got a good laugh out of that. Anyway, so here's the preamble. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure, now they're talking about ensure like underwriting, not E and ensure like making sure, they're underwriting the domestic tranquility. So let me get back to the order here. In order to perform a more perfect union, so that's one of the things they're trying to do, establish justice, another thing they're trying to do. Now they're saying justice, not social justice, justice by the law. Ensure domestic tranquility, underwrite domestic tranquility to, you know, protect it. Provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. That one little sentence, that one little semi-paragraph is a mouthful. Understanding what they just covered, they did a very good job of explaining what the heck you have here. Now, the one thing you don't know, unless you've heard this before, this preamble was cut in half. Half of the preamble was removed. What do you mean? What's GR mean? It was reduced by half its size. Because the preamble, prior to going into the style committee received the preamble like a day or two. I think it was like 2 or 3 days before they went to print. And the style committee removed a huge chunk out of the preamble. You want to know what it said? It basically listed all of the states in such manner. They said, we the people of the state of Georgia, the state of all 13 states were listed. In other words, it wasn't we the people of a collective body. It was we the people of the sovereign state. This is why I pointed this out to you in the ratification debates, where Henry challenged just that we the people. Oh, that sounds like a democracy. Well, Henry was right. But actually, as Madison said, it's not we the people of a single body like a populace or a popular vote. It was we the people of the 13 sovereign states. They thought that by removing the listing of states, it read better. It just had a more warm reception, more inviting. So they removed that. But it didn't change Article 7 because it wasn't ratified. The Constitution was not ratified by a popular vote of the people. That the Article 7 was to be ratified by conventions of states. In other words, people had to send delegates. It was still done in a Republican form. It was not done by we the people. It was done by our representatives who knew better, who campaigned and was chosen to represent the people of every county, or however they broke it down. It may have changed from one state to the next. Bottom line, we the people is not referencing a democracy here. We the people was actually referencing the sovereignty of the states, but that was missed because of style changes. Okay? So, Article 1, Section 1. All legislative power. So right out the gate, the very first line is a violated clause. All legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and a House of Representatives. Legislation is now being done by both the Supreme Court and the President. They use executive orders and case law and rulings to subvert legislative powers and authority. So, in other words, we have a three-headed monster trying to rule us, and they're all working together, trying to basically get us into the corner to destroy us. That's how it's been playing out, folks. But to be clear, right off the top, as I told you, it didn't take long for them to violate just the first part of the Constitution. Section 2. The House of Representatives shall be composed of members chosen every second year by the people of the several states. And we will take a break from this because it's that time. And we will actually talk about electors as a part of this and the requisites or the requirements for somebody to be eligible to hold those positions. But we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so now Section 2 kind of dives into the House of Representatives and electors. Now, what's an elector? Actually, an elector is your representative. And as a matter of fact, in a republican form of government, you have a right to choose your elector. In other words, you, and only you, can choose your representatives. Now, the House of Representatives shall be composed of members chosen every second year by the people of the several states, and the electors in each state shall have the qualifications requisite for electors of the most numerous branch of the state legislature. In other words, whatever the House of Representatives are for the state legislature, the electors' qualifications must also be met with that. And 9 times out of 10, the House representation of the state represents the same as the Congress. Does that make sense? I hope so, because it's, you know, when you look at your House of Representatives in your state, the electors
actually have to meet those same requirements. They have to either be a citizen of your state for how many years. They have to be a U.S. citizen and so forth. Now, it says right here, no person shall be a representative. Oh, by the way, electors in each state shall have the qualifications requisite for electors of the most numerous branch of the state legislature. That's actually being violated, folks, because the party constantly is voting and choosing electors that aren't within those requisites. They don't meet those standards. A lot of times, I've actually witnessed where the Republican Party, and I know the Democrats are even worse, but I've witnessed where the Republican Party has actually nominated and has chosen an elector, because first off, we'll get into this down the road, that the party has no authority to do this. We're actually supposed to, you know, vote and choose. And in so doing, if it is managed the way it's supposed to be by the Secretary of State, you can't even get your name on the ballot if you don't meet the prerequisites. Voila. But the parties have made this a political tool, and they use political hay by trying to choose. And I remember a long time ago, you know, the Republican Party was trying to, you know, make some political hay out of choosing a young black 18-year-old to be an elector for the choosing of the president. And they seated that young black man as an elector. Well, that was a nice gesture, but it's absolutely unconstitutional. You know, it's nice to be politically correct. It's nice to make people feel good. But the Constitution's the law, and you can't violate the law. This has nothing to do about racism or trying to spin perceptions. Anyway, no person shall be a representative who shall have not attained to the age of 25 years and seen 7 years or have been, I'm sorry, no person shall be a representative who have not attained the age of 25. So in other words, you have to be 25 years of age and been 7 years a citizen of the United States. Now, let me ask you this. Can a person at the age of 17 become a citizen of the United States? No. Well, technically, actually, they can. But most states, it's no, because most states, you can't become a voter, you can't become a citizen until 18. You can't become, you know, you're not emancipated. But here's the problem. When you look at the prerequisites for the militia allows 17-year-olds to do this. So technically, a 17-year-old could actually become a citizen. A 17-year-old becomes a U.S. citizen that is born here naturally. And that means that a 17-year-old, when they become a citizen, they are eligible to serve in the militia, to serve the Union, to execute the laws, suppress insurrections, repel invasions. So technically, they have, you know, the 25 and 7 years forces, you know, because you minimum seven, because most people think from 8 to 7, 7 plus 18 is 25. But technically, a person would actually make that prerequisite of 7 years actually early. So what I'm saying is that the 25-year age threshold becomes the primary threshold, that you cannot become a representative until age 25. Now, if you are an immigrant in your adulthood, you have to stay here for seven, you have to be a resident of the state and a United States citizen for 7 years. Now, whatever the residency requirements are for the state positions, but federal positions, it is 7 years. Okay, so moving forward, and has been seen a citizen, and who shall not, when elected, be an inhabitant of that state in which he shall be chosen. In other words, and who shall not be, when elected, an inhabitant. So in other words, you have to be an inhabitant of that state. And many states have actually created caveats or additional laws to this that you have to have residency of at least 1 year. They don't consider you a resident of the state or an inhabitant of the state until 1 year's time. And I'd love to see, you know, actually states kind of build that board, that boundary up to maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Because it's wrong. It's what we call, it's the consummate or the epitome of a carpetbagger. Anybody that just travels along and just tries to set up and tries to sell themselves, you know, as the next greatest thing politically to get themselves into a position of power or what have you. The next paragraph, representatives and direct taxes shall be apportioned among the several states, which may be included within this union, according to their respective numbers, which shall be determined by adding the whole number of free persons, including those bound to service for a term of years and excluding Indians not taxed, 3/5 of all persons. So those are the representatives, and that's the apportionment of it. But this was actually modified by Section 2 of the 14th Amendment. This is why Section 2 of the 14th Amendment is so important. And when we get to it, you will see why. But basically, this was just delineating how representation and taxation was to be apportioned. So in other words, the framers realized that there was value in representation. The people wanted, you know, to get, you know, to get their edge or have a better footing in representation, but along with that came the taxation. So what they could have done was they could have said, okay, you know what, we don't want to have representation because we don't want to count, or we don't want to count our slaves, but they did. They wanted to maintain full count of slaves so that they would have equal representation to the northern states. And this was a huge compromise, my friends. When we go through, if we ever get a chance to go through Madison's notes on the Constitution, and I talk about this a lot, that in August 22nd in 1787, when George Mason made his famous statement that all slave owners are petty tyrants, that when you look at the compromise that they made by doing this, they made a mathematical formula that they didn't even understand, that over a short period of time, the southern states would be a noticeable disadvantage, that the southern states would actually start losing representation as new states came into the Union and as the northern states continued to grow with population. The southern states didn't have lots of people moving there to say, I want to set up a plantation and own a bunch of slaves. Pretty much the majority of that was all in-house, if you want to call it inbreeding, in-house, what have you. It was organic to the culture of the people there. It wasn't a lot of people immigrating to the United States that said, I want to be slave owners. So what you saw happening was as the northern states started growing in population, their representation went up. This is one of the reasons why I go through this all the time, how Missouri was forced into slavery with the Missouri Compromise, because the southern states recognized that they had lost their advantage because of this mathematical formula. And I'm telling you that the framers didn't even know. The framers thought, okay, well, this would kind of help propel, because I believe everybody in the room thought that this actually evened the scales. And only the good Lord knew that this would force the abolishment of slavery. So anyway, as we move forward in the same portion of Section 2, it says that the actual enumeration shall be made within 3 years after the first meeting of the Congress of the United States. So what I'm reading right here, folks, is really kind of dead parts of the Constitution, because it was only applicable at the very beginning of the Constitution. And so, in other words, it goes on and says, and within every subsequent term of 10 years, in such manner as they shall by law direct, the number of representatives shall not exceed one for every 30,000. So this is a part that is violated, and this is a part that is egregiously violated, because the number of representations shall not exceed. Do you understand what this says? The number of representations shall not exceed one for every 30,000, but each state shall have at least one representative, and until such enumeration shall be made, the state of, and then they go through how many states get what representation. Tell me, how is it that we have one representative for almost a million people today, when right here it states that the number of representatives shall not exceed one for every 30,000 people. We'll be right back after this.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so I can't emphasize this enough. And as a matter of fact, we're huge supporters of the First Amendment of the 12 amendments in the Bill of Rights. This is the one amendment that has never been ratified. And it would actually force representation to go back to 50,000 people. And I'm telling you right now, folks, there's no amendment. There is no amendment granted to actually change the number of representation. What happened was they said, oh, well, we don't have enough seats. We have to build a bigger Capitol. And for the most part, the Capitol was sufficient, I believe, all the way up until almost the 1900s. So in other words, they started having to play around with, you know, how to do this. And they basically told the states, we're going to do it this way. And the states didn't know anything better. And as a matter of fact, they tried to play this game. Well, it arises under this Constitution, so we have jurisdiction. But they don't have jurisdiction to change the Constitution and what it says. That 30,000 is a very specific number. It's not there's no language here that says, and Congress and or the Supreme Court or any part of the federal government will be able to regulate as such needed if, you know, if the capacity, you know, does not suffice for the body or the side. There's nothing like that. They're violating your representation. And as a matter of fact, if you are in the state of Montana, if you're in the state of the Dakotas, you know, because Wyoming gets representation for 500,000 people. But all these other states, they have to wait until they get to 1.5 million people, because it's basically 750,000 people that require one representation. And so you have to actually exceed that to get that, you know, that next representative. And so we need to force Congress back into representing us. And folks, every time I've talked to anybody regarding representation exceeding 30,000 people, they go, well, that will grow government way too big. No, it won't.
We live in an age where government can actually operate out of this home. In other words, they can telecommute just like you had to. The pandemic proved that the government can operate outside of Washington, D.C., because businesses operated outside of the sanctity of their four walls or their buildings and so forth. Now, it doesn't mean that we'll vacate, but my point is, folks, we have to start demanding and having this conversation, because until we actually start rattling the sabers and saying this is an absolute violation, and as a matter of fact, I know Jacob Arlington, who was a huge advocate for representation, you know, I would love to see him, because his involvement with the Constitution Party, and I've mentioned him on this show before, he was trying to lead Washington State with the Constitution Party. I'd like to see him actually write this petition, because he's somebody that really understands this and could actually get this done, and demand that our congressional representation be representative of, no greater than 30,000 people per representative in the U.S. House of Representatives. Anyway, so what they do is then they go through the list of states where New Hampshire shall have 3, Massachusetts 8, Rhode Island shall have 1. And actually, look at the name of the state of Rhode Island is not Rhode Island, but Rhode Island and Providence Plantations. Guess who changed their name for political correctness? Yeah. Anyway, Connecticut had 5, New York had 6, New Jersey had 4. Pennsylvania had 8, Delaware 1, Maryland 6, Virginia had 10, North Carolina had 5, South Carolina had 5, and Georgia had 3. Now, so the states that actually had the largest representation was New York with 6, Pennsylvania with 8, and Virginia with 10. Wow, I mean, those are the big players. And in all honesty, Pennsylvania may have been well populated, but it didn't have the big ports. So it didn't have the opportunity of the flow of commerce to really flow. And they were dependent on New York. They were dependent on Virginia and so forth to be able to move their commerce. Now, Philadelphia was, kind of up the river, but it wasn't a sea-bearing port like Norfolk or New York City, Massachusetts, so forth. Anyway, and what was Massachusetts again? Massachusetts had 8 as well. So there you go. Probably those 4 states had probably the bulk of representation out of the 13. Anyway, let me move on. So as we look at the next paragraph, when vacancies happen in the this is the final paragraph of Section 2. When vacancies happen in the representation from any state, the executive authority thereof shall issue writs of election to fill such vacancies. The House of Representatives shall choose their speaker and other officers and shall have the sole power of impeachment. Now, the sole power of impeachment is the power to decide to place charges upon the President of the United States. Now, had Section 3 included the President of the United States, they would have had to change this part of Section Article 1. Then they would have all had to replace a part of Section 3 as well as a part of Section 2 or Article 2 and Article 3. They just, because the process was there and they had actually, they were getting ready, if I remember correctly, if they had already done it or they were getting ready to impeach Andrew Johnson, the Civil War president, survivor, vice president of Abraham Lincoln. He ended up losing his reelection campaign after Lincoln was reelected, but nevertheless, he did get impeached. Now, Congress had proven that his impeachment was unconstitutional, or why they were trying to impeach him, but he was only impeached. He wasn't tried and convicted. So, anyway, let me kind of move on. Section 3. The Senate of the United States shall be composed of 2 senators from each state, chosen by the legislature thereof, modified. This is modified by the 17th Amendment. And they shall serve for 6 years, and each senator shall have 1 vote. Now, many times when it comes to voting, they didn't talk about the voting power in the House of Representatives, because the House of Representatives in sometimes had to vote by delegation. And in the 12th Amendment, it talks about each state, the delegates of the one state will have a choice of only one vote. In other words, all of California, even though they may have 30-some representatives, the voting power is only one vote when it comes to, you know, the issue of the 12th Amendment. I want you to think about this, folks. There's merit in actually forcing the delegate vote and writing in a constitutional amendment in keeping Congress, when it comes to any type of approving a bill or what have you, and taking away, you know, let's say it's an emergency bill. See, I don't even want to see an amendment like this. But if we went down this path because the states decided to allow them to have these emergency powers of war and you know, what have you, then they need to include a constraint that would require a certain amount of states to, and actually it wouldn't be a majority, it would require maybe 60% of the, you know, of the states, and that it would force the states to vote by delegation. In other words, California would only get one vote, and so it would require 30 of the states, is that right, 30? I think so. 30 would make 60, right? Yeah. So you'd require 30 states to actually pass a bill to spend an inordinate amount of money. It's not necessarily, you know, 50%, but I'm telling you that it would be a harder threshold if we gave them those powers, that they would really have to all believe enough, because you'd get the Democrats to spend recklessly. But the Republicans and the red states, they would not be so inclined. So anyway, I'm just throwing this out here as, you know, food for thought to think about. Anyway, so as we go into this, immediately after they shall be assembled in consequence of the first election, they shall be divided as equally as they may be into three classes. This is where they actually break up the Senate based on terms, in other words, when they are to rotate. And the important thing is, they looked at the House of Representatives as a complete flush. In other words, it's okay to get rid of all of them, because anybody can walk in and do Congress, the House of Representatives' jobs. The Senate is different. The Senate actually requires that, you know, we look at these treaties. They require continuity to make sure that the, you know, the issues brought up, the research and everything else, because back in those days, they didn't have the ability to document that well, and it was very laborious. So to understand, the person had the domain knowledge. Instead of creating domain knowledge for anybody and everybody like we do today, that's why we have actually internet domains and so forth. But anyway, I can't believe I'm out of time. We're already through a good part of Section 3. When we come back, we'll wrap up Section 3 and continue on. But this is how we're going to do it. We're going to go through the Constitution and show you how it is being violated and what we need to do. We already have one petition that we need to fix regarding, I'm out of time. I'll be right. I'm G.R. Mobley, Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.